travels through a kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
Hello and welcome to Travels Through a Kingdom. As always, it's myself, Kaya, with you until 7 o'clock this evening, and I do hope you can keep me company up until then. How are you keeping? What did you get up to this week? Did you go for any Sunday walks around the county? And if you did, where did you go? I don't want to brag too much, but I did walk 20,000 steps yesterday, and my legs are sore today, actually, now that I think about it. Maybe that's because I'm unfit. But I went to Ash's Cafe in Kemp and I walked down to the beach there, and it was absolutely beautiful. It was a bit of a humid day, so I did consider buying a new t-shirt afterwards because I was sweating so much, but it was lovely. And then I went back to Dingle and I had a lovely evening there as well, and it was nice because I waited until the sun went down and all, so it was great. It was a lovely evening as well. So let me know where you got up to this weekend, any nice walks. If you did anything fun, you can text and WhatsApp me on 083 300 3300. And you can email me as well, kflynn@radiokerry.ie. Now, on tonight's Travels Through Kingdom, we will be in Kenmare to hear from Ian Humphreys and his expedition at the Kenmare Butter Market. We will listen back to the archive of Sean Hurley, and if we have time, we will listen to some music as well. So if you have a song that you'd like to hear that you haven't heard in a long time as well, let me know and we can play it at the end of the programme. So get those text messages in to us as well, and we can pick out a lucky dip. And if your song isn't played tonight, who knows, we could play it next week as well. So get those into us as well. But first, we are going to hear from some people that took part in the Tongcrean Dingle Peninsula Challenge 2022 to raise money for the Kerry Hospice and Down Syndrome Kerry. Kieran O'Callaghan started his challenge a few years ago and has been growing ever since day one, and he was on with Deirdre a few weeks ago as well to talk about the challenge. So I caught up with him on Friday night at Benneville, where he and the rest of the group, there was nine of them, where they were about to set off for the challenge, which involved walking, running, mountain climbing, kayaking and cycling. And I first of all asked Kieran how prepared he was for this.
Well, I've been preparing all my life, really. But for this particular event, I've been doing it for the last 5 years. So as soon as this one's over, I kind of go into winter training with some of the lads, and we do strength and conditioning in the gym. A little bit on the bike, a little bit of walking, you know, not to overdo it. The secret when you're older is less is more. But yeah, and come the new year, then we start upping the mileage and stuff like that. But nothing too serious, just to keep us in good nick. As I said to Deirdre, it's not a race. It's an adventure and it's a challenge, and it's raising funds for Down Syndrome Kerry and the Kerry Hospice. And that's ultimately our goal. So training is secondary, really. Some of them, I think, will suffer because they haven't enough done, but that's fine. That's all part of the fun, yeah.
Where did the name Tongcrean Challenge come from?
Well, the link is Daniel, one of my colleagues who's doing the walk. His son is Down Syndrome, and he's obviously involved in Down Syndrome Kerry, but Enda O'Brien, who is hugely involved in Down Syndrome Kerry, and his boy is also Down Syndrome, Hugh. They are the grandson and great-grandson of Tom Crean.
Wow.
So hence the link, and we thought it was a good idea, and it seems to be working well, and people are impressed by the whole challenge that we're doing, and so far so good, yeah.
What's the hardest part of the challenge?
Do you know, I think it's actually this walk. Not physically, but because you're going through your sleep time. When you get towards the end of it, that last hour, you're kind of exhausted, and it's you just want to stop and go to sleep, which is probably the worst thing you can do. So we try and keep going, and you know,
keep the blood moving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and it's good now that you have a really nice bunch of people going with you. You know, it's not just you on your own. So all of you can pick yourselves up together.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've three teams this year, which is unusual. I mean, it was me on my own for a couple of years. Then the two lads came on board, Daniel and Patrick, and now we have three teams. We've Team Larry and Team John. three teams of three. All of Patrick's been quite ill recently, so he's taken a step aside, and we have Michael Collins come on board to help out. And I mean, having those nine people involved makes it easier in terms of raising funds as well, and I think we've raised up to nearly 30,000 so far, so it's going really well. Yeah.
From the first time you did this, did you ever expect, number one, to raise so much money, and number two, to now have 9 people on this team?
Well, last year we did very well. I mean, the plan was always to get good guys in, you know, and they're friends of mine. And but they all so happen to be 2 businessmen, so they're very good at wheeling and dealing, and it's worked out really well. We got 40 grand last year, which was amazing. We're hoping to get more this year. We did start a little bit late, but it's starting to ramp up, and funds are flying in, and great sponsorship from different companies, you know, and hopefully we'll get to thank them, you know, over the next week.
And if people still want to donate here, in how can they do that?
If they still want to donate, they just type in Tom Crean Dingle Peninsula Challenge 2022 GoFundMe and it will come up.
Perfect. Listen, thank you so much and best of luck. It's getting a bit chilly.
Thanks.
It's around
10
at night, but I'm sure you'll be up for it around 3 o'clock in the morning.
Look, not about that, but looking forward to it for sure, yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So my name is Daniel Bohan.
Daniel, and you're taking part in this challenge. Tell us a bit about why you're taking part in the Tom Crean Challenge.
Look, I'd be friends with Kieran, and I was involved in it last year, so I kind of have a bit of experience from last year doing it, and we decided, myself, Kieran and Pat, that we would keep it going. And look, it's exciting. We've had a great turnout here tonight before we kick off, so it's exciting. And obviously then we want to raise loads of money for 2 very important charities in the Kerry Hospice and Kerry Down Syndrome.
And what does that mean to you, supporting these charities?
Look, it's important. It's you know, particularly Down Syndrome Kerry, it's not state funded. They raise all their own funds, so to be given the opportunity to kind of raise money and I suppose increase awareness and help them out any way we can is great, along with the hospice. Kieran obviously has ties to Kerry Hospice and stuff in terms of supporting his own family. So look, it's a privilege to be able to, you know, go off and do something like this and raise funds and give something back, and that's what it's kind of all about.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful cause to support and everything like that. Now, Daniel, how did you prepare for this?
My preparation would be cagey in comparison to last year. Look, I maybe 2 or 3 days a week just doing various bits. The key with this, I think, is just to, you know, have nutrition and have food on the go, because you're moving for 24 hours really, and you're cycling, you're climbing, you're running, you're swimming, you're kayaking. So it's just making sure that you're fueled up properly, and so that you can get through it really. And the objective is to finish it within 24 hours, so it's a race, but it's not a race. But we need to have it done within the day is the plan, you know. And the weather is good, so that helps.
Of course it does. And you've obviously done this before. How did it go before?
Yeah, we did it last year. It was great. It was a great experience. I'd never done anything like it, so I'd never been up a mountain, never kayaked. So it was my first time. So this year I kind of have an idea of what's coming. Now, there's 9 of us this year doing it. Less 1, because the third cog to our team, Pat, unfortunately broke his leg training for it. So I don't know, is that a good or a bad omen? for a lot of the lads, there's going to be 7 guys on it that this is going to be their first time doing this. So, you know, I'm excited for them. I think they're going to love it.
And I suppose as well, having a group of lads like that, having the banter, the crack, everything, that'll keep you going for those 24 hours.
Ah, yeah, the crack will be unreal. That's 3/4 of the enjoyment, you know. So look, we're going to be stuck together for 24 hours up mountains and kayaks out in the Atlantic. All the good stuff, so, and we'll have a bit of a laugh, you know, and then hopefully a bit of crack and dingle tomorrow night.
My name is Patrick O'Sullivan, so I did it with the lads last year, Daniel and Kieran, and this year I'm going to miss it.
And why are you missing it this year?
I injured myself. I broke my leg when we were scouting in one of the lakes. We went up to look for one of the lakes, was it 8 weeks ago? And I've had a few complications with the broken leg, so... It's made sure that I'm not going to do it this year. But I'm here to support the lads, and hopefully they're going to have a great event, you know.
And speaking of that, Pat, how is the support for them?
The support, like, is class. If you look at Daniel and Kieran, the passion behind the two lads. Kieran is very passionate on supporting the hospice last year, Comfort for Chemo. Daniel on his charity for Down Syndrome Kerry. And it just means so much to the guys. And both of them love to be fit and active. So for them, this is, it's jolly. they enjoy it, they love the crack, but they're equally behind the fundraising and taking this fundraising very seriously. So it's for a great cause, and
it is. And we're here, it's 20 past 10 on a Friday night, and look at the amount of support that's actually out here for them already.
Yeah, look, here, there's nine people going, was it eight, and it's families, everyone's family is here. As you say, it's 20 to 10, and they're heading off now for the night. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch for the night and end up an inch tomorrow morning at 4, maybe 5 o'clock in the morning, feeling dizzy, feeling like they want to go to sleep. They'll probably take about an hour's kip on one of the benches outside the hotels in Inch, which is a funny experience because some people fall asleep, some people don't. Mm-hmm. And then they head off cycling and just go through the day until tomorrow night around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And finish the event. It's quite a grueling event, but they do it at their pace and they're both well used to it, and the guys will do with them, you know.
As a friend, and you know, training with them over the last couple of weeks, Pat, how proud are you?
Ah, sure, the two lads are just phenomenal, you know. Like, I met Daniel, I knew Kieran all my life, I suppose. He's been doing it for the last 4 years, 5 years, since the death of his wife Fee. And it means so much to him. Last year, a friend of mine passed away from cancer, and I got on board with him. It meant an awful lot to me, with the comfort for chemo and for last year's one. And Daniel likewise came on board, and the passion for the two lads has just been phenomenal. This year, two other teams have joined us. There's six more. Basically, what they saw what we did last year, and they more or less came to us and said, "Look, we'd love to do it with you and to raise the monies with you for the charities you're going for." And you know, everyone here has given it their all in the fundraising, and they're going to go in and enjoy this event. So, you know, I'm very proud of them. Yeah, the lads are great.
And that was Kieran O'Callaghan, Daniel Bowen and Patrick O'Sullivan speaking to me on Friday night. And I was following their page on Facebook as well, if you want to have a look of what they did for that challenge. If you look up Tongcream Peninsula Challenge on Facebook, you can see what they went through, and you can see they were going here for a dip. They were cycling, they were kayaking at the sunrise, it seems. And the video was put up around 8:15 yesterday morning. It looks spectacular, and what beautiful weather they got as well. And it seems as if they arrived into Dingle last night around 9 o'clock, I would say. Unfortunately, I wasn't there to meet them at the time, but it looks like, you know, the food was ready for them and they had such great support, and there's just loads of smiles on people's faces as well. And what an achievement to do, and hopefully every year it gets bigger and better. Just like Kieran said, starting off with just him, and now there's nine of them doing it. And if you still want to donate as well, there's still time, don't you worry. If you search Tongcream Dingle Peninsula Challenge 2022 on the GoFundMe site, you can donate there, and there's still loads of donations being put in there for such good causes as well. And they should be so proud, and well done to everyone that took part in it. And again, on a Friday night, to be there at 10 o'clock gearing up and then thinking, this is my next 24 hours. You know, you'd nearly think, oh, is this a good idea? But no, it was brilliant and well done. I just think it's very inspirational, and it's a lovely thing to do with people as well. And like I said to the lads, there will be moments where they're like, oh gosh, you know, how many more hours of this or something. But when they have friendship and good vibes around them, I think that will just get them all together as well. So, you know, really good friendships there and memories for life as well. Okay, we need to take a quick break here on Travis Stewart Kingdom. And if you want to text or comment, you can do so. We're on 083 300 3300. We'll be back after these.
You're listening to Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
And you're very welcome back to this evening's Travels Through a Kingdom. I hope I all find you all in good spirits on this Sunday evening. Now, it's the last day actually to nominate for the Best of Kerry. So if there's anywhere around the county that you see is the best beach, best barber, best beauty salon, best hairdresser, best coffee, best butcher, best ice cream, plenty of ice cream during the summer actually that was had, best pub, best takeaway, best tourist attraction, best family business, best club jersey, best restaurant, best sandwich, best spa, best festival and best hotel. So you can go onto our website, radiokerry.ie, and onto the Best of Kerry page there, so you can start nominating those. Tonight is the last night, and we will do up a short list then. It'll be the final five. So if you have anyone you want to nominate, you don't even have to nominate on every one of them, you can just nominate on the ones that, you know, apply to you as well. So do get voting for those, because tonight is the last night, and then we'll have the voting closed for 2 days, and we'll bring out the short list then. Now, next on Travis Through a Kingdom, we hit Kenmare. Ian Humphries is an artist from the UK and is now living in Ireland, and he is currently has his arts expedition in Kenmare Buttermarket for the month of September, and I had the pleasure of speaking to Ian about his life with art and his expedition.
My name's Ian Humphries, and I'm originally from the UK, but I've been living in Ireland since 1999.
Mm-hmm. Ian, what brought you to Ireland?
Ah, well, the first thing was I flew to New York in the early 80s, and I looked out the window and I could see this beautiful landscape below me, and I said to my friend that I was travelling, where's that place? He said, it's Ireland, you idiot. And so I said, that's the next place I'm going on holiday. So I did, and I fell in love with the place and the people.
What was it exactly that you loved about Ireland?
Well, the UK parts of it are beautiful, the West Country where all my family are, but it's so densely populated, whereas Ireland, when I got here, it was far less populated and such a beautiful landscape, and then such a rich culture of the music and the life in the pubs, which I fell in love with as well. And just the people were so warm and welcoming. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Ian, you're an artist, so tell us a bit about that.
Well, I've always been an artist. Wasn't much good at anything else. And so really, the first thing that made me realise that was I was about four. And I was part of a large family. There was eight children. We're all very close in age. And on rainy days, my mother would give us paper that my father would bring back from work, huge big sheets of paper that there'd be technical drawings on one side but blank on the other, and she'd cut it up and give it to us, and we'd all be drawing away. And my favourite thing was to get a big handful of crayons and just scribble. And my brothers said, oh, Mummy Ian's wasting all the paper. So my mother came over and she picked up my little toy wooden train that my father had made me and said, put that on the table, and said, if you drew that, you could do the scribbles for the steam coming out the funnel. Mm-hmm. So I did. And then she was amazed, and my brothers were amazed, and I was allowed to stay up until my father came home from work. And he said, did John do that? And mother said, no, it must have been Peter then. No, was it Colin? No. Well, it couldn't have been Ian. And he said, yes, it was. And he picked me up and he gave me a kiss. And he said, one day you'll be a great artist. And that was it, really. When I got to school, I found that I could draw. And quite well, I could say what I wanted to in drawing as well. I couldn't say what I wanted to do in anything else. And then there was a lovely man in our village called Mr. Levy, and he came to the school and saw my drawings, and he worked in London, which is only about 40 miles away from where I was brought up. And every Saturday, he used to take me up to London and drop me at the steps of somewhere like the National Gallery, and I could draw from the great masters all day, from about nine, I think it was, when I started doing that. So I had a great introduction to it.
Yeah, I was going to say that you had great, you know, support and everything. And I suppose that's what brought you to where you are today as well.
Absolutely. Another thing that brought me here was there's a lovely man called Chris Boone, who was English as well, but lived in Ireland and was an art dealer. And he said to me one day, Ian, why do you keep coming here on holiday? Why don't you just move here? And I said, that's a great idea. So I did.
Yeah. Brilliant. And I suppose you never looked back?
No. Now, I go back to England to go and visit my family, my dear mother, who's 94 and lives near the sea in Devon and is very fit, and my brothers and sisters, and then all my nieces and nephews, of which there are hundreds. So we'll be next trip back there. There won't be until next March or so, when my mother will be 95 and we'll have a huge family get together.
Brilliant. You mentioned now that your mother lives near the sea, and a lot of what you do of your art is influenced by the sea. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, everywhere that I live would influence. Yeah, well, the environment that I'm in would influence it. If I was in London or New York, I couldn't paint these paintings at all. These paintings are totally about the environment that I'm in. And I think that's what you do, or I do as a painter, is just absorb things. I don't go out and make a sketch and then think I'll paint it. I just paint and let what you've seen and experience come through you. So it's not a picture of something specific or particular, it's a feeling. Mm-hmm. And when the painting tells you that feeling's there, that's when you stop working on it. You know, the painting tells you. And all I am is that I'm the conduit to let the thing happen. So it's a case of just being in the studio every day that you can and paint. A bit like going fishing, you know, you've got to be there the whole time, but then you might catch something and you might not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ian, how would you describe your paintings?
Well, the most recent paintings tend to be quite large. There's the largest painting in the show is 8'6" by 5'5". 5'6".
Bigger than me.
Yeah. I like working physically. I'm 6 foot something. And I like the action of... I stand up, obviously, to paint. And I use the paint very thickly and then very thinly. I use all kinds of tools, from big squeegees to sponges to large palette knives down to sticks, my fingers, as well as brushes of all shapes and sizes. And so there, when you look at the paintings, there are heavy impastoed areas and very glazed areas. And they, although they're very much about painting, people see the sea in them, or the feeling of the sea in them, and maybe the beach or and the sky. That's always somehow present in them. But they might be... the last painting I was saying is called Electrum, which is a mixture of gold and silver. And the painting's actually got gold and silver in it, gold and silver paint, and many shades of it in between. And the painting is about light. It just reflects back light, like the sea. Mm-hmm. Does.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have your exhibition here in the Butter Market in Kinmare, so tell us a bit about that.
Well, I was very lucky to be invited to put work here from John Good at the Mill Cove Gallery in Kinmare. Suggested it, and the Butter Market accepted it, and they've all been incredibly helpful and excited along with me about putting the thing up in such a wonderful space. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know the history of the Butter Market. It was a butter market years and years ago, and then it was a dance hall, and then it was a cash and carry, and then it was empty, I think, and then these people bought it and turned it into a fantastic exhibition space. Mm-hmm. It's very large, and this is like a retrospective since I've been here, so you can fit work from every phase I've gone through. Mm-hmm. Whilst I've been here.
What did it feel like when they approached you about this idea and then accepted it?
I was just very excited. It's not often that you can see this body of work, this amount of work together, and to see it in such a clean, large space, so the paintings can see each other, and I can see where I've gone. You know, it's like looking at your own history, and it's fascinating. Like, I only see them in my studio, which is a very dirty, messy place.
Yeah, and then we have the clear white walls here, so that's, I suppose, right. It absolutely stands out to you completely.
Absolutely.
Now, you could only pick a few of what you've done over the years, so what kind of pictures and paintings do you have up at the moment?
Well, the first paintings in the show are still lives. When I was in the UK, I was painting still lives. But this painting was painted here, and it is a still life, but you can see in it sort of reference to the sea already, and its title is Kedge, after a rock not far from where I live, in just round from Baltimore, West Cork.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I painted from some people, and then the people and the still lives came together. In there are lots of objects at the bottom on a plinth or a table, and they could have references to the Catholicism and paganism mm-hmm. that's been here. And about the people here and the local history here, and then there are some very strange characters, and there's a mixture of figures that could come from dreams. I just start painting, these figures came out, but after a while the figures had to disappear because I needed to look again, so I just painted just straight from the sea for a long time, and then slowly but surely that developed into more abstract things in the studio. Mm-hmm. So over a period of time it got more and more abstract, and there's one big area then of the exhibition where the movement, instead of being horizontal, it goes vertical. Mm-hmm. And that's because I was at the Joseph Albers Foundation in Connecticut, USA, on a artist in residence scheme, and I'm surrounded by trees, so this vertical movement. It was the middle of winter and there were icicles falling all the time, beautiful, or snow, and they made this vertical movement arrive in the paintings. This reflects again the environment that I'm in. Mm-hmm. I didn't consciously think I've got to paint the snow, it just changed from horizontal to vertical, and when I got back here again it changed back to the horizontal. So, and that's the way it's developed on. It's just become more and more heavily impasted. There are small tiny paintings as well in there, and there's work on paper, but my favourite thing to do is the challenge of a very large canvas.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose you can just let your imagination run with that.
I don't this might sound funny, I try not to use my imagination. Okay. I try not to use my conscious mind. I try and just paint, and if I get lost in it, I do my best painting. If I am conscious thinking, I'll change this, I'll put this like that, or I'll paint this bit red or this bit, it always looks precocious and pretentious and awkward. But if I can just relax enough, mm-hmm. and don't try but paint, in this kind of furious activity takes place, somehow it all comes out and works. And then I have moments of contemplation, looking and looking and looking and analysing it to see if it has worked. It's a bit like, though, driving a car. You probably drive it quite well if you're not thinking about, I must change gear now, I must put my foot on the clutch now, I must brake now. You don't think about that, you do it automatically, and you get to a different place. Mm-hmm. And the painting, really good paintings like that, when I finished it, I got to a new place that I've never been to before. Mm-hmm. Because I've let it happen. You make and you let, and it's a give and take between the two. You have a notion of a direction, but you don't have an idea of what it is until you've got there and finished.
Very wise words, Ian. Finally, how long is the expedition going on for, and when can people go and see it?
They can go and see it every day, except for the 16th of September, as there's a wedding taking place at the venue, which will be very interesting to see what the wedding guests think of these paintings. But it starts on the 4th and it finishes on the 25th of September.
Brilliant. Perfect, Ian. Well, I hope everyone goes and sees this and see the artwork and the history behind it and your thinking as well. It's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kaya.
And that was Ian Humphrey speaking with me last week, and it is most definitely worth the trip to Kenmare Buttermarket to see his work. And my advice would be, if you are going to see it, have a really good look at Ian's paintings, because each painting has its own unique touch. We must take a break, but there'll be more after these.
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
And you're very welcome back to this evening's show. Now, it's time to revisit the archive of Sean Hurley. And before I do, I just want to mention it was Sean's second anniversary just this week on the 8th of September. And I just want to say, over the last 9 months of doing Travels Through a Kingdom, and I've been listening back to Kerry White and all of Sean's work, all of his work has always put a really good smile on my face and a feel-good factor as well. And sharing that work with you as well means a lot to me and both everyone that listens to it as well. And I've heard people say they look forward to listening to that part on the show as well. So now let's take a look at Kerry White from Sean Hurley.
Now to Lyrecum Pawn. When we mention Lyrecum Pawn, there's only one stop a person could go to, and that is the Four Islands.
Now, so we're going to sit ourselves down on a Sogan chair here at Jimmy Roach's, and the man I just mentioned is sitting just opposite me. Jimmy, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Very well, Sean, and welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back as well.
Yeah. The last time I was here, I didn't ask you about the actual pub itself. I know you sang songs for me, you recited poetry and all of that, but the pub itself, does it go back very far?
Well, and of course, it certainly goes back. My great-grandmother sold drink here, Sean. I don't know, was it a Sheeby Inn or a pub, but she sold drink here anyway. Yeah. My great-grandmother, that is.
Was that legal? At the time,
I don't know. So it's been in the family ever since, anyway.
It's gone from strength to strength, one would say, because it's known all over the world now.
It is, I suppose, although I suppose with the new breathalyzer laws and everything, the city is fairly hard now, you know. Nobody can drive here and have a few drinks and go home afterwards, you know.
But that could be said also, of course, of the many pubs in the towns nowadays.
Yeah, that's true too, I suppose. That's quite true.
Would you have a taxi service at all here?
No. We have no bus service in Lyrecum.
You won't get the odd fella coming in out of the good of his heart saying, I'll drive home your customers at night?
Well, you wouldn't get the odd fella, I suppose, all right. Yeah. That would do it, yeah. Oh, that'd help out. That very neighbourly around here, that's one thing about him.
Mm-hmm. How about the better nights of the week? What would they be?
Sunday night would be our best night, because the local boys run a lot and they hold the draw here on Sunday night. But the weekends, usually, Monday night is usually very quiet, and Tuesday, Wednesday. It's a family-run business, and we'd have to manage.
Right. You know. And you still have to keep it open, the bad nights as well as the good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. We play a game of cards as well, you see. We play 41 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, maybe.
Keeps the home fires burning.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're very well known for a song that you had one time, Mick O'Connell, the boy from Valencia.
That's right, Sean.
Yeah.
Written by a local man who is now deceased. He taught me for a while in Lyre School, Francis Ahern. He composed this, I believe, among other ones. He was a very talented man. He taught in Lyre and Brown School, as I say, for a spell, and then I'm sure after that he moved down to Senegal, where he spent the rest of his teaching years, and he died down there, as far as I know. He made one about Mico in 1962, I think, in Strathcommon. I was at the match, actually.
Right.
I haven't been to Croke Park very often, but I was glad to be there that day anyway.
We might have that song tonight, because after the last broadcast, some fellas said to me, in the name of God, why didn't you get him to sing the Mick O'Connell song? Even though the one about Crowley was very, very good as well.
I'll try the one about Mico so tonight. In the county Roscommon, they thought they were through to the All-Ireland crown of 1962. They forgot that the kingdom had a hat full of tricks since we beat them before in 1946. And O'Connell, the boy from Valencia, the pride of the kingdom was he. So down in Killarney, the plans they were made, where a ball is a ball and a spade is a spade. And with Dr. Eamon, the boys did prepare for to fight on the ground, but to win in the air. With O'Connell, the boy from Valencia, the pride of the kingdom was he. Niall Sheehy was sound, and Tim Lyons he was great, and the bold Seamus Murphy he rarely was bait. In goal Johnny Cullity, as brisk as a bee, nothing passed him that day but one lone penalty. And O'Connell, the boy from Valencia, the pride of the kingdom was he. up the centre where often our troubles begin. It was handled with care by the brave Lucy twins. When they hit the Lee Road with a fist or with brogue, it was cleared from the wings by Dwyer or Sean Og to O'Connell, the boy from Valencia. The pride of the kingdom was he. On the mark, Timmy Sullivan, a boy of renown, and the pride of the girls in his own island town. Jerry Reardon was game for a win, lose or draw, and as fleet as a hare was Dan Mac from Dua, and O'Connell, the boy from Valencia. The pride of the kingdom was he. In the corners the kingdom had two balls of fire. Pod Sheehy, we're sorry, he since did retire. And Gary McMahon, so fearless and bold, found the net when the game was just 1 minute old. Through O'Connell, the boy from Valencia, the pride of the kingdom was he. And now to conclude and to finish my song, here's a last line or two in the praise of Tom Long. When he fielded the panicked and played tug-of-war, and each place kick was lofted straight over the bar, by O'Connell, the boy from Valencia, the pride of all Ireland is he.
And that was the archive of Sean Hurley. And that is almost it for tonight's programme. I want to thank everyone that got in touch, to everyone I spoke to at the Tongcrean Dingo Peninsula Challenge, and to Ian Humphreys as well for speaking with me and sharing his story here on Travels Through a Kingdom. Now, I did ask everyone if they had a song that they'd like to play, and there's one here I have from Charles. And it's going to be John O'Dreams by Christy Moore, which is a lovely way to finish off the show. And do make sure you stay tuned here on Radio Kerry, as Elaine is on the way with 7 Days at 7, and then the lovely Sean Riley is on the way with his Irish favourites from 8 as well. Thank you all for getting in touch, and I'll be talking to you at the same time next week.
When midnight comes and people homeward tread, seek now your blanket and your feather bed. On comes the rover, his journey is over. Up the night time to all John the dreams. Yield up the night time to all John the dreams. Across the hill the sun has gone astray. Tomorrow's cares are many dreams away. The stars are flying, your candle is dying. Yield up the darkness to all John the dreams. Yield up the darkness to all John the dreams. Both man and master in the night are one. Some things are equal when the day is done. The prince and the ploughman, the slave and the free man, all find their comfort in Old John. The dreams all find their comfort in Old John. When sleep it comes, the dreams come running clear. The hawks of morning cannot read.